CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney's services as outstanding and excellent. Also, Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
Well, today we are joined by Christopher Hammond. He is one of the founders and director of finance of a startup company called Waste to Watts. Welcome to the show, Chris.
No, thank you, Lorraine. Thanks for having me.
Well, Chris, we've known one another for a relatively short time, I guess, maybe 12, 18 months. And we first met, I was judging a competition at the Georgia Tech Institute of Technology, locally known as Georgia Tech. And you were, Waste to Watts was the winner of last year, 2010's competition. So give us a little bit, if you would, about your background, your degrees, and so forth. You're quite a technology savvy man. Tell us a little bit about some of your education and we'll get into a little bit of your career and such.
Sure. So I graduated in electrical engineering from a small school in New England called Worcester Polytechnic Institute and also went to get a master's there and then shortly after got a degree in engineering management from Duke University. So I've always tried to kind of offset the engineering component with business as well. I did an entrepreneurship minor as an undergrad also.
And tell us, if you would, what was your first job where somebody was paying you real hard cash, whether it was in pounds, shilling and pence, or pennies and cents and dollars? What was it?
Well, I think my first job, I was a grocery stacker. I had two jobs, actually. I was a grocery stacker at a local grocery store, and I also had a paper route. So I got the entrepreneurial spirit very early on. I went on shortly after that to start my own lawn mowing business as a kid. I've had a job continuously since I was about 15.
So what did some of those early jobs, paper route, groceries, starting your own washing company, and what did they teach you?
Well, definitely getting up at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. every morning, rain or shine, to do the job. It taught me perseverance and commitment and kind of a hard work ethic. And also working closely with customers as a teenager in the grocery business was kind of more customer service, being attentive to people. So it was an interesting way to get started in the career field.
So what drove you from that to perhaps being an entrepreneur?
Oh, well, I've always been interested in entrepreneurship and how business works. I had the lawn mowing business, and then a really close uncle of mine had a business that did very well, the paint business. And then, unfortunately, the economy changed in the 90s, and big box retailers kind of moved in, and he went under. So it was watching him go through that whole rise and fall process really motivated me to want to learn more about business and engineering, and that's kind of what made me pursue that in college.
So you have a couple of engineering degrees. You've gone through some business and entrepreneurial education. At what point did you decide to hook up with, you've got a phenomenal team, let's talk about them perhaps in a minute, but at what point did you decide to get the bug to be the one to jump off the side of the cliff and be the entrepreneur yourself?
Well, I mean, after school, I've always tried to make time for traveling and volunteering, and I've been to about 62 countries since leaving the U.S. the first time in 2004.
Did you just say 62 countries?
Yes.
Okay.
It's turned into an obsessive passion of mine. But one of the things I kind of noticed is there's a lot of problems in the world, and it kind of made me more of a dreamer, especially when you see the same problem occurring over and over again. Kind of fast forward from when I first started traveling to 2009, myself and a Georgia Tech alumni, James Molini, and I were paired together in a hospital in Tanzania, and we began repairing medical equipment as part of our volunteer work. One of the problems we saw on a daily basis was, you know, unstable power. 2-3 hours a day, the power would go out. We'd be in the hospital, and in the middle of a surgery, the power goes down, the anesthesia machine goes down, and the doctor's running to get the ether rag, and, you know, you just slap your head saying, you know, how is this acceptable? You know, how can people live in environments like this? And it really kind of motivated us to want to do something. So we patched together a kind of rough cut solution using a car battery and some old computer parts. And now, still to this day, it's in Karatu Lutheran Hospital, where they have a backup source for their operating room. So we kind of came back to the U.S. We recruited a team and decided, you know, to pursue this as a full-time business.
So let's talk a little bit about your team. You've mentioned Patrick. Talk to us a little bit about the makeup of your team, who they are, the degrees, and perhaps what they bring to the team.
Sure. So I met James Mullaney. He's the president. He's a biomedical engineer from Georgia Tech. Very bright guy. He's also doing professional medical device sales now. So he's also got a really good entrepreneurial and sales background that he brings to the table. We also have Patrick Caputo. He's currently doing his PhD at Georgia Tech in fiber optics research. So bringing him onto the team just improved our engineering capability significantly. And then we've, in the process of that, since founding, those are the core founders, we've brought on folks in marketing and developing corporate responsibility, strategic partnerships. We've brought in some financial advisors. We've brought in a number of professional undergraduate, graduate members to the team that have not only given us a great skill set to draw from, but also has made us eligible for a number of different competitions, whether they be undergraduate or MBA-only competitions. We've got team members kind of spread in different areas. So it's been really nice having them on board.
So you now have a team of quite substantial skill set and strength. Talk to us a little bit in terms of the advisors that you have. Certainly when I'm advising startups and companies that are on that next stage of perhaps angel and then into venture capital growth stage of their business, I advise that you should always have, number one, a very good lawyer, the best that you can afford, and that you should have some very strong finance expertise. Talk about the people that you have on your team, whether they come with those skill sets, and whether they're formal or informal relationships that you've developed. How have you done that?
Well, first I've got to give a shameless plug to you, Lorraine, for being one of our financial advisors. You've given us some great support and feedback and really helped us grow our financial plan and our model into something that is kind of sophomoric and early on to something that, you know, is very defensible and reasonable to an investor or a business contest judge. So we really appreciate all of the help you've given us so far. Got to get that shameless plug out of the way.
Thank you very much.
At the same time... we've brought on a number of folks. So we've got a couple of lawyers. I have a friend that's a patent lawyer. We've got a business lawyer that's really helping us plan on structuring our deal for professional investment. We've got a biomedical engineer with over 30 years experience in 20 developing nations. He's based out of Atlanta, actually, as well, at MedShare. We've got a number of other folks that have contributed not only time, but connections, resources, and it's really great, especially in being in the social entrepreneurial space. People are always willing to help and to give you advice because, you know, they're not just tied to seeing you successful financially. It's when you want to do something to help people really get behind you and support you. So it's been been really nice having that support structure in place.
Well, let's also give a rah-rah for you and the team. You've had a significant number of successes to date. You've won several competitions, and you've been in the rankings for you currently are in the rankings for some other competitions, some of which pay money to you, to the team, for Waste to Watts in terms of helping spur on that early stage of growth. Talk about the competitions that you've won and the successes that you've had to date.
Sure. Well, we raised about $40K from Venture Pay and competitions at the national level, whether it be the 100K MIT Challenge, University of Chicago, Dell Social Innovation. There's a number of contests out there that fit a variety of different niches, and with our broad team's skill set, we've been able to qualify for a number of them. We actually just found out about the Lee Kuan Q competition at Singapore Management University. We were selected from 604 down to 6 in the world. So we're really excited to be going to Singapore in August to defend that. There's about 36K up for grabs for first place, so we're hoping to do that. But it's been interesting because these competitions, you know, they have cash prizes, but what's really great is getting FaceTime with experts and in the field and people that have done really well in business, and having their reactions in a very low-risk setting has been very useful to validate our idea and to give us the confidence that we need to sort of transition, which is where we're at now. We're going from a student-led, a business plan competition type of fundraising to more professional private equity and grant means. So having all of that experience in the competition circuit has been enormously beneficial, and it's been a low-risk way for us to vet our ideas.
And so those are some of the successes which, very candidly, Chris, I think speak to you and the team, not only the efforts that you're putting in. All of you have day jobs, so to speak, and you're doing this as double time. But let's talk a little bit about some of the challenges. Starting up a business is all about getting the right people in place. The second step is making sure that you have the funding so that you can actually put legs on the horse that you're building. What kind of challenges have you met?
Well, one thing that it amazes me, and every time I tell people this, they're very surprised, is we're a 100% virtual organization. I live in the Raleigh-Durham area. Patrick is completing his PhD in Atlanta, and James has had sales territories in Boston and Florida. So the three core founders live in different places. We have to communicate virtually almost exclusively. We see each other maybe once a month at best. And most of the work through collaborative things like Google Groups, GChat, SharePoint, using technology to back the organization has been surprising, and actually it's worked great. I mean, it helps that we're friends and that we're tolerant of the crazy schedules we have, but the fact that we can collaborate almost exclusively virtually has been amazing, that we've been able to do as well as we have given those sort of constraints.
So one of the constraints has been one of logistics. I certainly know that in my dealings with you for your daytime job, you're often in a different country.
Definitely. Yeah, that's one of the, I'd say that's one of the opportunities I've had is my day job for quite some time was going into developing countries and teaching a medical device repair. So it was really great that they were willing to work with me and share my passion for my business. I was actually able to take our prototype along, do validation throughout East Africa and Southeast Asia, speak with hospital directors, speak with local business owners, find competitive prices. I mean, all of this very easily rolled into my day job. Of course, it doesn't leave much time for sleep, but...
That will come, Chris. And you know what? If the dark lines and circles appear around your eyes, there's people that can help you out with that as well. Well, let's talk a little bit about your business, because it is a product. You are providing the technology and the enabling for the medical service to take place. Talk to us a little bit, if you will, about the actual product. I'm giving you a time for shameless plug.
Sure, I will gladly use that then. So basically, Waste to Watch mission is to take repurposed electronic waste and provide a viable energy product for emerging markets in developing economies. So essentially what we do to keep our cost of unit down is take recycled electronic waste and use it for our most expensive components. Typically, this sort of waste, like for instance a computer power supply, is discarded after 2 years, but the average lifetime is on the order of 10 years. So we're reusing higher-end electronic components in order to bring the price down. And these are discarded in the millions each year. 400 million units worldwide is estimated, and that's an old number, actually. About 133,000 computers are discarded in the U.S. every day. And then when you combine that with the problem of energy poverty, which is significant, 1830 outages per month, it's a massive global problem, about a $32 billion market for the latent demand of power in just Southeast Asia, India, Africa, and South America. So it's a big number out there. It's a huge problem. And what we do is create an uninterruptible power supply that provides extended backup power, and it comes at an extremely affordable price point for a developing world consumer. We plan on marketing these not only in the healthcare community, but that's probably our biggest initial pilot market, because we want to improve healthcare in these places, and that's kind of how the idea originated. But so moving on to small and medium businesses that are energy dependent, being able to play the World Cup uninterrupted is a competitive advantage in a lot of communities. Now, having a router that will provide internet access continued throughout the day, gives a significant advantage to an internet cafe or a coffee shop. Because in most homes and in most institutions, the power just isn't reliable. It goes out on almost a daily basis for 2 to 3 hours at a time. So our goal is to provide a very low-cost energy backup supply in countries that need it most.
Fabulous. And what stage of growth of the product are you?
So we've developed, we're currently on our third prototype iteration, and we're investing money now into a fourth generation that's more less prototype, more full-scale production. So we're cost optimizing the components to bring the cost of goods sold down, and we're working with suppliers to make sure that we can source them at an extremely affordable price. So we've come a long way. We've validated it. We've tested it. We've showed it around to people in hospitals and small businesses. And now we're about to invest about $100K into product development that will be ready for mass production, hopefully within the next 6 months.
Fabulous. And to that extent, is your customer the hospital?
Yes. So we want to start with hospitals, but then expand to businesses and middle-class individuals, as well as internet travel agencies, internet cafes, restaurants, and so on. So.
And your business, by the sounds of it, has a significant arm of international generation, certainly from a consumer perspective. Which countries are you targeting as your first couple of countries to begin in?
Well, I think we're going to target India as our entry market. We've done a lot of validation in other countries, but India has an enormous amount of electronic waste internally. It also has a very dense population. They have a lot of problems with the energy situation there. They have a very skilled labor force that is underutilized. And that's another piece of our business that we try to make very clear. We want to provide local jobs, assembly, as well as service and opportunities for local residents in the countries that we'll be selling. So with that, we want to enter the India market first and then expand on sort of as a micro-franchising element to other countries once we've perfected our supply chain, gotten our manufacturing costs down to a minimum, and really piloted and vetted the local investor micro-franchise model that we hope to unfold.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the numbers. We are a finance show. Can I ask you how much investment you're looking for and how many rounds of investment?
Sure. Well, right now we've done enough to cover all of our previous product development and secure intellectual property. We're about to go, like I said, on to a significant product development effort that will allow us to bring the cost much further down for typical consumers. So we're looking for about 100 to 150K in bridge financing that'll carry us into a seed funding round of about $500,000. And then assuming everything crunches out right and we prove our manufacturing capability, our supply chain sourcing capability, the micro-franchise model works as well as we expect it to, we'd probably go to a Series A ask of about $3 to $5 million. But that's all, five-year plan versus immediately, which is about 100 to 150K that we're looking for right now.
So when in the program do you and the other founders get paid?
Hopefully soon. But we're passionate about what we're doing. We're willing to defer salaries, that conversation as long as necessary to prove the technology and to really have the product where we want it to be. So that I think around the between the bridge and the seed funding, hopefully we'll be able to invest in ourselves a bit more. But luckily we all have day jobs and we're passionate about what we do, so it's not as big of a concern.
Sure. And certainly the social aspect of the consumer, the end consumer that you're helping, could be the patient, although they're not the one buying your services. They certainly will be the recipient when the hospital can run and the internet cafe, somebody can get the internet while drinking their cappuccino in India or Africa. But you've also got a social aspect in terms of employing local personnel in the communities where the community itself has had economic disadvantage, if you will, and certainly it's a poor economy but with opportunity. So that being said, what has fundraising really like been, and what has it been like for you? The economy, we're 2011, we're essentially pulling out of what has been quite a significant downturn. What have you found in terms of the opportunities and the circles in which you've been asking for investment? Is there investment money out there?
Well, there is, and it's interesting. Walking the thin line between nonprofit and for-profit as a social venture actually just makes us more eligible for other grant opportunities. The whole green aspect of our business opens up another door. So there's a number of potential funders out there, and it's really interesting to see foundations and government aid organizations adopting the more venture capital model. Typically, the foundation and government aid organizations are more bankers that just kind of provide cash to charities. You have an annual report, but beyond that, there's not much, a lot of control built in. But now you're seeing a shift from that to more of a tranched venture capital model where, capital infusions are staged and you have to meet certain milestones in order to even be eligible for funding. So it's been interesting that our strategy is appealing to the same type of person, which is professional investor. Even at the grant level, we have to prove that we're able to meet certain milestones. We're having to break all of our goals down into short-term and long-term tangibility. So it's been very interesting. And there are a number of organizations out there for social ventures, for environmental ventures, for ventures that are aimed at improving conditions in the developing world. So particularly angel capital out there that we're looking at now, has been blown away by the number of groups that are out there, willing to listen. And we've just started that process. So hopefully in a couple of months, we'll have great news on that front.
And part of the challenge, Chris, is the fact that there really are a lot of angel investor groups. And how do you spend your time effectively targeting the prospect? Have you done some analysis and profiling of what that investor looks like?
Yes, we've been narrowing down a giant list of people, organizations, angel funds, and have kind of narrowed it to the strategic areas in which they typically like to invest, whether it be clean tech, whether it be projects in Africa, whether it be healthcare-related projects. So it's finding the niche of what the investor is interested in, you know, creating social outcomes in, and then defining those outcomes in a way that map to their expectations. So
And in case there are any potential prospect investors listening, do you want to run down what that profile is so that they can say, yeah, that could be me?
Sure. So we're clean tech. We want to do business in India and then expand on to Africa and South America, ultimately. We have a very strong environmental focus. We want to, not only is our product end-to-end guaranteed to be environmentally friendly, but we also go out into communities and create recycling incentives to draw recycled material in and centralize the collection. So we've got the environmental focus, we've got clean tech, energy, in a high-growth sector. I mean, the latent demand for energy the world over is enormous, and until governments kind of invest and the infrastructure to make it possible, the need is just going to continue to grow. So there's a pretty significant return that we expect for our investors in the long term of the market. So financially motivated is also one of the areas that we would discern an investor on. We're able to provide a slightly larger return than typical social ventures most likely.
Wonderful. And certainly somebody that for whom the social awareness of the communities that you will be serving, I think, would be key.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the aspects of how you have determined to raise the capital. Did you even go to any banks or financial institutions?
We've shopped around at a couple of VC firms, just kind of doing preliminary discussions, making them aware that we're here and really working with them early on to say, okay, so here's our idea. We know we're premature for you, but we wanted to kind of set our expectations right. What would you need to see to demonstrate that we're worthy to invest in? So we've already taken it upon ourselves to plan our expectations and our goals to the investor, in that Series A, which is at least 2 or 3 years away, and then backing out from there. So that, we can ensure not only that we're not overly diluted, but that also we're creating the right business incentives and systems, financial systems, to ensure that we meet the growth and impact that, an institutional investor would be looking for. So we've kind of taken the long-term view of how we want to be in 3 to 5 years, and then we've been slowly backing up. Once we've sat down with VCs, they're always very open to introducing us to their friends and colleagues in similar spaces. We've targeted the VC firms and made sure to get introductions with them based on the social aspect, based on the fact that they work on clean tech. So it's a very small community, and that's been very beneficial in helping us find and meet other people.
And in terms of regional logistic aspects of those VCs, has it been New York, Chicago, California?
Primarily the Boston area. I was actually very surprised about the Raleigh-Durham area. It was very up-and-coming in terms of angel groups, VC firms, the amount of investment and capital that's going around in this area is fairly significant. We haven't started in Atlanta yet, but we're about to begin that process over the summer, getting connected with the local organizations, using our Georgia Tech side to help find the right angels and the right institutions that might be out there in the Atlanta area as well.
Fabulous. And have you done any of the presentation style investor opportunities where you pay to play? Essentially, you get 20, 30 minutes in front of an audience of investors and you pay X thousand dollars to be able to present. Have you done that?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
There are some investment groups, certainly in Atlanta, and then some further afield. I think that is the second stage for you to pay to play, if you will. You need to make sure that you have achieved a certain amount of success already. They tend to be the kind of organizations for whom an entrepreneur that is maybe doing this the second or the third time and already has success under his or her belt can very easily present because they've done it before. The first-time investor such as Waste to Watts, your group may have a little bit of a challenge because it's new to you, but certainly having worked with you guys for a year, if not 18 months, I know that the experience that you have, you're soon to be able to go there. And it's good opportunity for you to sit in front of investors. The downside is you have to pay to play. And any time you can stand in front of a potential investor and not pay is potentially an opportunity for you to, you know, be a little bit more frugal with the company's money as well.
Certainly.
And have you looked... Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Have you looked to any international markets for funding? Because you very much are an international company.
Yes. So that's part of our model is we want to, at least with our operations and assembly, we want to make that locally invested, not only to build connections with the local community and have, you know, someone with political muscle in the area to help us navigate all of the business and political risks, but also, you know, to have a vested effort in the community to make it more sustainable and long-term. So we've begun looking at angel groups in India. I have some connections from grad school that have opened their eyes to some of those. And early on, that's definitely something we want to do. We haven't fully explored that yet, but we are looking into it. Absolutely.
Well, if there are any potential investors or people that are listening that could connect you with that investment source, let's give you the opportunity to plug your website and how they might reach you.
Sure. Yes. So our website is www.waste2watts.org. And I can be contacted anytime at Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at waste2watts.org. And that's waste2watts.org.
And that's WATTS.org.
Yes, ma'am.
Waste to Watts. Fabulous. Well, so what's next? What have you got coming up in the next 6 to 12 months? Do you have any competitions? Do you have any grant opportunities? What are you guys working on?
Throughout the summer, we'll be continuing to develop the product. We're bringing in some professional sourcing folks to help us bring the cost of goods sold down significantly. We've got a number of grants that we're applying to over the course of the summer. We've got the competition in Singapore. We have a Ashoka competition we're waiting to hear back on. So there's a number of milestones that are occurring over the summer, and we hope within the next 3 to 6 months have the product fully developed and ready to enter the market in India.
Well, that's fabulous. So how do you decide who gets to go to Singapore?
Oh, well, we've already decided that. The two guys that have worked the hardest on it on the undergrad side get to go. I'm thinking I might join them as an advisory role, but we'll see.
And the challenge there, obviously, is who's going to be able to present and all of you are such so strongly embedded in the corporation that I know that you'll be able to present, but it's time away from work, and it's also somebody that can handle that element of jet lag and get up the other side and be fresh and ready to present.
Yeah, we've made sure to make everyone vested. I'm confident in their abilities. I'm excited to see how well they do in August.
So what is
times for sure.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of your challenges financially to date. You're all self-funding. How have you been able to manage, you know, when you have these kinds of trips, does the competition pay for your expenses or do you have to foot the bill for that?
In this case, yes, but most of them we've had to finance ourselves. We've been incredibly frugal. We've never paid a dime in salary to anyone. and we've used, you know, winnings for business plan competitions. We've always set aside some of that winning to, you know, for future business development efforts, which in this case is just going to more competition, you know, increasing prize money and difficulty. Basically, we've pulled it together. We're still in the green. Haven't gone negative yet, but knock on wood. Things have gone pretty well. We've just been very, very frugal and very sweat equity oriented. In this venture, social venture area, we've had a lot of luck that people are willing to do a little extra, are willing to, you know, volunteer, because our outcomes associated with this project aren't only driven by financials. They're driven by, you know, alleviating 250 million outages in the next 5 years, of creating local jobs, at reducing, you know, waste into landfills by 2 million pounds. I mean, we're not just a company aimed at making money. We want to do well while doing good. So I think that's been one of our keys to success, is just all of the gracious support and all of the help that people have given us along the way, you know, for free, just because they're excited about what we're doing.
That's fabulous. That really is fabulous. And I think that it speaks to the element that is a very strong element of going for your first and second rounds of funding. It really is the, I'll say, charm, education, credibility, experience, and what the founders bring to the table. We've certainly had some guests on our show that have talked a little bit about the surprise that the questions from the investors have been quite personal in nature. And what have you done before? Why do you think you're going to be able to make it? If I write this check to you today, what are you going to be able to do for me? And why should I give you the money? What makes you think you can pull this off? Have you had those kind of questions come at you?
Oh, of course. And I think it's just been a matter of being honest with people. We've been doing this for over a year on almost no budget. We're committed. We're not, you know, we're here to do this. You know, we're running at a very low cost organization. We're very frugal. We're going to treat your money like it's our own, and that's how we've been doing it. We've invested, you know, thousands of dollars of our own money in this as well in the process. So, you know, we're just as committed as the investor is to seeing a return on investment. And you know, we're not going to be to squander or anything. We're very frugal and focused on and making this happen.
Sure, and that $150,000 of bridge money that you're looking for, certainly it's not so large a number compared to the multi-millions that other companies are looking for. Second round of $500,000 and then Series A, I think, will be in the multi-millions for you, the 3 to 5 million stage, and that probably is a year or two away for you. If you were to have the opportunity right now to plug any aspect for your business, what would you like to plug?
Well, I would say that we're passionate about this. We're going to do it. We're going to find the money wherever we can. We're looking for the right sort of folks, investors that are going to bring the experiences, the knowledge, the connections to help us make it successful. So, you know, we're discerning of money takers here as well. We're not looking for anyone to kick us, you know, a few thousand dollars. We're really wanting to have money that has value add and has experience and knowledge and, you know, people behind it. But I'd say we're serious about this because we want to bring life-saving, life-changing technology to parts of the world that don't have it right now. And we want to prove that, you know, just because the power is interrupted in the developing world doesn't mean life has to be.
Absolutely. Well, we are unfortunately coming towards the end of the show, Chris. It's always a disappointment when we have a wonderful discussion with folks such as yourself. My last question to you, we've got a tradition on the show to ask your CFO tip of the month. From the perspective of being the director of finance for a startup company, what is your tip of the month?
Well, I would say never be afraid to reach out. It's something I found that's been enormously beneficial. Even if it's last minute and you're unsure, there's so many people and there's such a wealth of knowledge out there. You should always be willing to ask for help when you need it. And we really appreciate all the help you've given us, Lorraine, definitely. And having financial advice, especially this early on in our process, has been instrumental in making everything work and making a cash flow balance every month. So.
Well, that's really is a great tip, Chris. And from a formal perspective, I'd very much like to thank Christopher Hammond for being a guest on CFO Radio today. It's been a pleasure having you, Chris.
Well, it's been a pleasure being on. Thanks so much for having me.
And we'd also like to raise a thank you to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, go to www.delaneyllc.com. And thanks also goes to our sponsor, Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and financial executives. We're sponsored by their local Atlanta chapter, and the website can be attained through www.financialexecutives.org. This and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO and would like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via the web. Thanks for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.